Rob Has a Podcast is made possible in part from the patrons of RHAP who allow me to make one podcast a week for every one of the infections suffered by the cast of Survivor Co Wrong. To find out more about the benefits of becoming a patron, visit robhasawebsite.com/patron or click on the banner at the top of robhasawebsite.com. Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now, here's a guy who still somehow has never been pushed into a locker, Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rob Has a Podcast. That's right. I have not yet been pushed into a locker, but I still kind of feel like that's going to happen at some point before I leave this world. But so far, so good on the locker business. Very excited to be talking about the voicemails here of the merge episode of Survivor Co Wrong, episode 7 of season 32 of Survivor. And today we're going to be talking with my buddy Matt Cerrone, the creator of MetsBlog.com, who has a lot to say about this season of Survivor and always has a lot to say about the Mets, who are opening up their season this Sunday night in Kansas City as they are on their way to try to get back to the World Series. So we will talk with Matt Cerrone here today on this show. Of course, we had some fun podcasts already this week. The Survivor Know-It-Alls, did my exit interview with Neil, and I just got back a little while ago from doing the recap podcast with Abby, Maria, and Pete, which was very fun to do, and also a very fun exchange happened in between when I was leaving there and coming here, because over at Podcast One, you know, there's a lot of different people that do their podcasts at Podcast One, and I mostly do all of my shows here in the studio, as most of you guys know, but, you know, sometimes I'll go rather than, because I live in the Valley, I want to go meet somebody over in Beverly Hills, which is where the Podcast One office is, where if it's easier for them, and that was the case with Pete and Abby, so I met them down there, and so I guess that the studio time right after us was for the Larry King podcast, and so Larry King showed up about like 10 minutes before the end of this. And so, you know, I could see Larry King in the waiting room, but Pete and Abby Maria were sitting the opposite way from them. They didn't see Larry King. But apparently, once we got done with the podcast, Abby Maria noticed Larry King. And it turns out that Abby Maria is a huge Larry King fan. Who knew? And she says that she watches Larry King all the time, and she needed to go and meet Larry King. So very funny interactions between, never thought I would see Abby Maria and Larry King together. And that was the case. And Abby Maria is telling Larry King how she's a big fan of his. And they're saying, oh, Larry King, these people are from Survivor. He's like, that's a crazy show. That's a crazy show, Survivor. So Larry King said he would not do Survivor. But I think Abby Maria and Pete were posting pictures on Instagram that they ran into Larry King. So very funny stuff on the way over here. All right. So, of course, if you want to make sure you don't miss any of the episodes of the podcast, make sure you're subscribed. Make sure you don't miss any of those shows that we did or what's coming up here. We still have to talk with Josh Wigler and David Bloomberg in the Survivor Week. Subscribe to the podcast. Go to robhaswebsite.com/iTunes or search for RHAP in your favorite podcatcher. And we always appreciate when you leave us your feedback and star ratings on iTunes because it helps more and more people find the show. All right, everybody, I'm very excited to get to our voicemail guest this week. That he's somebody that I have been following his career for many years, and he is a big, big Survivor fan in addition to the creator of MetsBlog.com and is also writing about sports at MatthewCerrone.com. Welcome back, our good friend Matt Cerrone.
How's it going, Rob?
Everything is going good for me. For you, this is probably like 2 days before the Survivor season in your world, right?
Yeah, it gets, you know, it's interesting. The start of the season, I get excited for, probably similar to you. You never really know what the year is going to be. I've been writing about the Mets for 12 years. I've been a Mets fan my whole life. But, you know, as far as writing and covering the team and doing what I do, every year is different. Every news cycle is different. You know, the technology changes, the platforms change. It's so like until the bell rings and the season starts, you really never know what you're getting. There you go.
Yeah.
You never really know what you're getting into. And and so that's all part of the fun. And so there is, it's sort of like this nervous excitement, not just because I'm a Mets fan and I want to see how they're going to do, but also because, you know, I'm excited about what I do and how I'm going to do it. So I'm sure you can relate.
Yeah, well, very excited to have you on because you are really one of the pioneers in my mind, and I think in many people's minds, of all of the, you know, sports team blogging that's gone on and sports blogging in general. So I do appreciate you taking time out of what must be a very busy schedule for you to come on here and talk about Survivor, which has become such a love for you over these last couple of years, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We've talked about this before. I mean, you know, I love, in addition to, you know, being a baseball fan and being a Survivor fan, I love politics. I love social dynamics, you know, that kind of stuff, social politics. And so, you know, watching the show, to me, it's not just, you know, sport necessarily, which, you know, I feel like it is. But I think there's a lot to learn, too, just in terms of, you know, social dynamics and kind of how you position yourself. I think there are actually things you can learn from the show. And at the end of the season, you know, books like things like Evolution of Strategy help as well, where you could sort of, you know, pick up sort of things and how to carry yourself and maneuver through a career, maneuver through social situations. So, yeah, it's fascinating to me. I love it.
OK, well, have you learned anything this season yet, Matt?
Yeah, be patient. I think, no, seriously, I think...
As a viewer or a player?
No, as a player. Well, I guess as a viewer too, but no, as a player, I'm really surprised at how aggressive some of the play has been, you know, coming off, you know, being a group of new players, you know, a season of new players, and just seeing how aggressive they are. You know, last season, obviously with all the returning players, it was a different deal. But these guys are being pretty aggressive as well. And I'm kind of surprised at that. And I think some of the better players here are actually the ones that are kind of being on their heels and kind of letting it come to them a little bit.
Well, it's very interesting how Survivor works, where it's not like sports where the same players play every year and then they, you know, come back the next year. And sometimes we have that, but it's also like, you know, we have a sport, you know, they play out the season and then we throw out all those players and then all a bunch of new players play the same sport. And then, you know, what did they learn from the people?
That would be interesting.
Yeah.
That would be very interesting. That, you know, that'd be interesting.
Yeah. Every year is a new bunch of scabs, unlike on Survivor where there are no scabs and people are getting medically evacuated.
It'll make my job interesting. Tell you that.
Yeah. All right. Let's meet all of the new players that are going to be in Major League Baseball this year. All right. Well, let's get into all of the voicemails that we have this week. So an interesting week. Again, no tribal council, but a lot of intrigue moving forward about what's going on this season. All right. Let's get us started this week with Danny, who is somewhere, but it is not Canada.
Hi, this is Danny, not from Canada. So my question is, if Neil does not get medevaced, this was on pace for one of the craziest tribals ever. Let's say he gives the idol to Aubrey. She plays it. They vote Scott. Jason and Ty use the super idol on Scott. That flushes the super idol. Also, that means no votes at this tribal council. They have to re-vote, and who knows who goes. It's crazy, bro.
Is it crazy, bro? Do you think, Matt, were we on the verge of seeing one of Survivor's craziest tribal councils? And did this bacteria screw us up and rob us and deprive us of this great all-time Survivor moment?
I love that kind of stuff, but there's no way that was happening. I think, I mean, what's your fan fiction? Is that your term, right? I mean,
yeah.
Fan fiction.
I'm like a storyteller. That's what I do.
Yes.
Right. So, I think based on the exit interviews and some of the conversations, you come to learn that, you know, Aubrey wasn't going to have the idol. And it sounded, tell me if I'm wrong, they were talking about Jason, not Scott. So, I can't see all of that coming together in the time that they would have had in that little scramble. But I think that's fantastic. It's awesome. It sounds great. It would have been a lot of fun, but I don't think so.
Sounds great. Here's what was going to happen. Based on my conversation with Neil, and as Stephen Fishback will always tell you, the exit interviews are not canon, but here's what was going to happen, that it was going to be 7 votes for Aubrey. Neil was either A, not going to give her the idol, and B, may or may not have played it for himself in that spot. He said in the exit interview with me, at least, well, he probably wasn't going to play it. Again, I think that might be a little bit omniscient. I'm not sure if Neil was going to get the hot tip from Nick exactly where the votes were going. I mean, that would seem to be maybe not such a great move to expose the alliance's secrets like that. But based on the information that we have, right, it was going to be 7 votes for Aubrey, 4 votes for Jason, again, according to Neil, And maybe or maybe not, Neil was going to play the hidden immunity idol for himself, and Aubrey was going to go home 7-4. So not, I mean, sure, it would have been interesting, especially when Neil gets up to play the idol, if he does, but seems like it's going to be just your run-of-the-mill tribal council here.
I'd be surprised even in a scenario like that where Ty and Scott get together, or Ty and Jason in the question. I guess it was to save Scott in his scenario, but I don't see how any of that kind of comes together too in the at a tribal council. I don't see that one playing out.
I mean, it might have been a good tribal council, but I don't think it would have been one of the all-time greats. And actually, I think we're on a pretty good run here, and I'm sure somebody's going to fact check me on this, in terms of players playing the idol when they are getting votes. I don't know the last person who played the idol and didn't end up getting votes on them. The last player that had a swing and a miss on the hidden immunity idol, I think it might be back in the original Brains versus Beauty versus Brawn, but I think we've been on a pretty good run with players playing the idol for themselves.
And it wasn't just with you. I mean, it's some of the other things that Neil was on. He had basically said the same thing. I mean, it just seemed like he had no intention of playing it and was actually kind of not necessarily a riff with Aubrey, but I don't know that he was totally, you know, ready to play the idol for her, let alone, and it seemed like he kind of had this sense that she was the one and that this is the way it was going to go. And like you're saying, to your point, they kind of, you know, they seem to, at least of late, have this sense of what, you know, a pretty strong sense of where the votes are going, and they're not going to play the idol if they don't have to. And it sounds like he wasn't going to either way.
I mean, he didn't give her the hidden immunity idol. If he doesn't give her the hidden immunity idol, he wasn't playing it for her unless he gets the information, you know, dead red. Hey, the votes are going to be on Aubrey tonight, and this is the only way to sort of change the tide. And I don't know if Nick was going to be giving them that information.
No.
I don't know. So I don't think we missed an all-time tribal council, but that's just our prediction. Who knows how it ultimately would have gone down. All right, let's take another question. Let's get into what Megan has to say. And Megan wants to know about Neil's chances had he stayed in the game.
Hey, Rob and Matt, this is Megan Yost. I just had a quick question about Neil. In a lot of his exit interviews, he seemed very confident about the fact that he would have definitely won the game. Do you think this is a likely possibility, and can you see a foreseeable path for him to get to the end, or do you think this is revisionist history? Love to hear your thoughts. Thanks. Bye.
Okay, Matt. Well, Neil did not make that claim with me, but he did at least say on Twitter, he tweeted last night, "You should consider yourselves lucky because I was going to beat each and every one of you, but they're pulling me from the game." So at least in the moment, and apparently from some of Neil's exit press, he felt like he was going to go on to win the game. What do you think was going to be the likely outcome for Neil?
I don't know. I wasn't buying that. Listening to him with you, I thought he was actually kind of passive and a little aloof. I didn't really get that sense of confidence from him. It's good PR. You know, he obviously wants a second chance. He's been training for it, he told you. You know, so I think to talk strong and confident and all that probably sounds good. But just as far as his path, I don't really see it for him. You know, he already kind of was feeling a little bit of a fracture with Debbie. He was kind of rubbing him the wrong way. You know, he kind of talked about, you know, Aubrey slitting his throat or whatever that comment was. So who knows really where all that was going. And I don't see him fitting in with Jason or with Scott, with those guys. So I don't really see, you know, how he would have sort of navigated his way through. He did have an idol, you know, but I just don't see how he navigates his way totally through that.
Yeah, it would be a tough spot. It really would be for him. So Aubrey goes out of the game. He's left with Jess, Debbie, and Joe from the Brains tribe in that spot. I'm not sure what his move is. You know, he would potentially have one bullet left in the gun, and that would be in the hidden immunity idol. And I think it's really going to come down to, is he able to seduce Nick, Michelle, and Julia, or Ty to come and vote with the Brains at that point?
It does feel a little Natalie Anderson-ish.
Yes.
But he's not that player. Well, he's not. To me, I think he was going sooner than later anyway, especially if they went after Aubrey and they were going to, and she goes, like, it just seems like he's sort of, you know, he's in line here.
Yeah. And that's really interesting that you brought up Natalie Anderson, because Aubrey has a secret scene where she talks about, boy, I feel like Natalie Anderson right now after Jeremy got voted out, that my closest person in the game is gone and now I have to do this all alone. So it'll be interesting to see what Aubrey does from here, and it'll be interesting to see sort of like the inverse of what that would be if it was Neil still in the game. But I think we probably have to see how the next vote is going to go, and ultimately, you know, what sort of things does Aubrey change, and what sort of things, other factors are going to be going on that we could say, oh, if Neil was there, he would have been able to do that. But it's hard to say. I don't think I would be betting on that as a likely outcome of the season, but I mean, crazy things happen on Survivor.
Yeah, I'm eager to see how Aubrey plays this. You know, I've liked her game so far. You know, some of the way she treated some of the people that have been voted out and aren't on the jury, you know, a little questionable, but so be it. You know, it's about, you know, what she does going forward here. And she seems to have some tools. You know, maybe she can kind of fly under the radar a little bit here. They were going to go after her, but now with Neil gone, you know, how do things adjust? You know, does she, you know, that's one of David Bloomberg's rules, right? How do they adjust? Let's see.
Be flexible.
Be flexible. So let's see. This is her moment. I mean, it really is, right? She had her head on the chopping block. She was right there. If it's not for, you know, the extent of Neil's infection, she's probably home. So, you know, this is her moment to kind of pivot and see what she's learned so far and if she can adjust. And if she does, I think she seems smart enough to know because she does listen and she does kind of understand, you know, that you have to be that person for people. Unlike Debbie, who I think is, you know, obviously is being the opposite of that right now. You know, so if Aubrey can do that, I think she can actually kind of slide through her a little bit and maybe get, you know, through all of this and become that person at the end. So we'll see how she adjusts. This is, like I said, this is her moment.
Also, the thing about Neil is that he was probably the biggest target on that brains group of four.
Sure.
And you had people like Jason saying, okay, we've got Neil. He's somebody that we have to go after and he has the hidden immunity idol. So we have to make him the target, but he might play his idol. So we need to get him to flush his idol. So let's vote for the person they'll never expect us to vote for. It's Aubrey. And now that Neil and his hidden immunity idol are gone, I'm not so sure that the next target is logically Aubrey. If Aubrey is the person that they're saying, hey, let's put the votes on the person they never expect us to put the votes on.
Well, and especially if she can kind of, you know, fuel wherever that vote goes, you know, she can sort of be up for grabs. She can be a free agent, you know, and can she sort of attach herself, you know, and kind of shift it a little bit. She can kind of retreat a little bit and kind of play from behind. The question is she capable of doing that? I think we've seen moments where she is and other moments where she gets frustrated and a little cocky and she's not. So we'll see what happens.
That's a really interesting point. So now, do we assume that the three remaining brains stick together in Joe and Debbie and Aubrey? We've seen that Aubrey has a tight connection with Joe, at least when they were together on Gondol, but now, after that vote, that switch up at the vote, I'm not so sure if she's still aligned with Joe. There's a secret scene where she's also talking to Ty about how, boy, I don't think I can, you know, keep Joe as my number one partner around here anymore. I need to make sure that I'm able to survive. We also saw her saying that, boy, Debbie is really getting on my nerves. So now that she's free of Neil, who might have been the glue keeping her with the brains, maybe she's one of these, as you said, a free agent that's going to spin off. And who knows where she could end up landing and not necessarily sticking with Debbie and Joe, a sinking ship.
Well, it seems like an opportunity for her to push out Debbie.
Mm-hmm.
If Debbie's rubbing people the wrong way, the way they sort of presented it, you know, and Neil had nice things to say about her too, with you know, that she was entertaining. It was actually kind of hard to pick up if what he was saying, she was annoying or not. Like, it seemed like she was, you know, entertaining and fun and in the character. And he kind of got all that stuff, not just as it plays on TV, but also mm-hmm. in camp. But if she's kind of, you know, the way she treated Ty, I thought was kind of weird. Like, if she's being a little aggressive and she's kind of overplaying her hand a little bit, which it seems like she is, maybe this is the opportunity for Aubrey to throw a brain under the bus and maybe save herself. But at the same time, it may be best for her to just shut her trap and not say anything and just kind of, you know, let it see where it goes.
That's interesting. So we'll see ultimately what's up next for Aubrey in this next week's episode. Okay, let's take one more question that deals with the evacuation of Neil. And this is from Ashley, who wants to know about the possibility of Neil 2.0.
Hey guys, Ashley Marie from Shadow Hills, California here. At the end of Caleb's medevac episode, it said something along the lines of, and Caleb hopes to play again in the future, which in my opinion definitely means Caleb's a lock for a future season of returning players. However, we didn't get that sort of thing for Neil. My question is, do you guys think Neil will get a second chance? Thanks. Love you, bae.
All right, Matt, let's talk about the prospects of a return to Survivor from Neil. We saw him actively working in his Ponderosa video to come on back. He has said that publicly that he would like to come back. He's ready for his second chance. What do you think of the prospects, Matt?
Well, they had to put that card up for Caleb because it looked like he was on his deathbed when they took him away. So even the minute they went to commercial, I fast forward and my wife was like, but wait, did they say anything? Like, she actually was wondering herself right there in the moment. Now, she's not on Twitter. She doesn't know that he's okay. So she was in suspense. We had to go back, and sure enough, there was the card they showed. And so, like, she was evidence of why that was necessary, where she didn't, you know, really say that about Neil. So that from a production point of view, it makes sense that they put that up there. How they worded it, whatever. You know, it seems like a nice opportunity as long as no one else gets medevaced, to have these two come back, right? You can put one on one tribe, one on another. You know, they're returning because they both kind of had to leave. It seems like there's some nice balance here to do something like that if they wanted to. He's certainly campaigning for it, I think it sounds like, when you listen to some of these interviews. You know, and yeah, I mean, I think there's a good chance because Caleb went, because the two of them are there. It seems like a nice way to sort of present it, that these two guys in the same season that both had to leave, let's give them another shot together at the same time.
See, I almost feel like the Caleb thing hurts Neil because the Caleb thing was such a dramatic moment. And, you know, I think it's such an interesting parallel because I think that I don't think it's crazy to say, I think Neil is probably a much better player than Caleb was. I mean, that Neil did seem to be like he was a very intellectual guy and he seemed like, you know, he had a pretty decent social game. But I'm not sure if it translated to the TV show as much as somebody like Caleb and his story of being the beast mode cowboy, that the two-dimensional character of here is the cowboy who overexerts himself so hard that he has to be medically evacuated from the game. I think that that character translates to TV and to the show better than Neil, who is somebody who's probably a better player and understands the game a lot better, but is somebody that is probably just more cerebral and has more of an irreverent sense of humor and is somebody who isn't beast moding at anything.
Except ice cream.
Except ice cream and infections, yeah. Unfortunately.
Right, exactly. No, I hear what you're saying. I mean, from a inside, you know, TV character perspective, all that stuff, you're right. It just seems kind of crummy to me to bring back one, not the other, when they were both medevaced in the same season. Seems kind of strange. I guess my argument would be if they could do it immediately, like next, you know, if you know, the next time they go out, they want to bring these two back. Then it kind of feels more natural. But I think you're right. If we're waiting three or four seasons down the road, and it, you know, then, you know, the legacy, if you will, a lowercase legacy, you know, of beast mode cowboy on Survivor, you know, I think you're probably right in that sense.
Right. And I think that with the beast mode cowboy, I think what they were saying is, yes, this is 100%. He will be back. Don't worry. Even though he didn't get to talk and do Ponderosa videos and stuff like that, where Neil was able to actually talk about his game in a coherent manner, whereas Caleb was in the hospital for a week. So I'm not saying that it's a no for Neil. I'm saying that it's probably a wait and see. And I don't think that his circumstances, where we talked about last night, that he basically had the same exact story as the Joe Dowdle in Survivor Token Sheens, where he is, you know, medically removed from the game due to an infection in the knee. It's not like every single player who gets medically evacuated from the game automatically gets their ticket punched to come back. So I think that
Has there ever been two evacuations in the same season?
Yeah, I think that that's happened before. Going back to, I know at least from Survivor Fans versus Favorites, that's where Penner is getting medically evacuated. Plus, you also had James has an issue with his finger. He gets medically evacuated. And it's also the thing with Kathy Sleckman, where she is, I don't know what you want to call that, but she's removed from the game due to urgent pleas for help. So I think they technically call that a quit, but I'm not exactly sure. But so people have been, you know, actually, and in the case of James and Penner, both of those people would play again, but I think that when it's a scoop in, when it's a Russell Swan, it's sure. somebody who is removed under dramatic circumstances of, oh my God, this person's life may be in danger. Let's take them out. It seems like that's the automatic ticket. The person who's medically evacuated for, boy, that's not looking too good, where it's sort of like not a life-threatening type situation, at least in the urgent sense of the game, where it's sort of like, boy, that's an infection. You know, I think you got to go. That person does not always come back. And more often than not, I would say that person, I mean, with the exception of Penner, who gets the knee thing in Survivor Micronesia, I don't think there's anybody else from that group that's come back. And I guess, and James and his, you know, infection in his finger in that same season.
It's also interesting in that, I mean, here's Neil just, you know, minding his business on the beach, and all of a sudden, hey, buddy, you're out.
Yeah.
You know, like I got to think that's got to be hard for him to, I didn't hear him really talk much about that in any of the exit interviews. That,
yeah.
You know, just that thought, I mean, that's got to really stink. There's really no other way to put it.
Yeah. He's really emotional about it in his Ponderosa video, which I do recommend to sort of like get the sense of it. I mean, that wouldn't even occur to me in all the time that I think about Survivor from doing the podcast. Like, if I was to ever play again and just have to be medically evacuated, that's not even an outcome that I could fathom in my mind of either, okay, oh, well, I'll either do really good or I'll get blindsided or get voted out early. It's like, oh, wait, that I could just like get an infection after 2 weeks on the show and then have to be taken out of the game. Like, well, what is that? What, I don't know how to process that information.
Yeah, exactly. After all that time. And yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Let's talk about some of the other stuff going on in the game at the merge. And let's take a question from Chris, who has a philosophical question about whether you should be going with or against the tide of the idols.
Hi, Rob. This is Chris Turnage from Orlando. On the Know-It-Alls, you and Steven discussed Nick's position and seemed pretty high on him being in an alliance with two people who have idols. I then began to wonder, what's better, aligning with the people who have the idols or against them? If you're with the people who have idols, sure, there's the possibility they could use one to save you, but I feel there's a greater likelihood you end up on the wrong end of a vote split. Whereas knowing where the idols are makes you extremely valuable to the opposing alliance and helps to take the guesswork out of future votes, since you no longer have to speculate about them. Which side do you think Nick should go with in this case?
Matt, I think this is pretty interesting in terms of which side should you go with, because I don't think we typically have on Survivor. One side has multiple hidden immunity idols. The other side does not. So what do you think in a vacuum is better to side with? Do you want to be with the side with idols or on the side that does not have the idols?
Well, let me just take a step back here and talk. If this was a baseball scenario, if this was what I'm doing in the other side of my world, we'd have stats for this. And you probably could find that information out. You probably have people that could do that. Like, I'm sure there's been scenarios where you could probably look back and see how things played out for some of these people when they were in those situations. But, you know, the other thing is it's very theoretical, in that how does Nick know that, you know, there isn't a same scenario on the other side of him? He's just not aware of it yet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that if he chooses, you know, one side, maybe there's three idols over there. He doesn't know. So like, I don't know that you can ever really make that choice, you know, and know everything, but you're right, in a vacuum.
Yeah.
I think I love the position. I love the position Scott's in. I would much rather be in that position.
Yes.
You've got a strong group. One, you know, they seem fairly loyal to each other. They seem to have a good relationship, you know, at least, you know, Scott and Ty and Scott and Jason. I don't know how Jason and Ty are going to get along, but it'll be interesting. But at any rate, they seem to have a nice group going. So there's some strength there. There's power in terms of the idols. Scott isn't responsible. You know, I love the concept of being a king maker, not a king. And I think he's in a really good spot for that, where he could sort of you know, help manipulate the situation without really having any of the responsibility.
Now, for Nick, that we are completely talking about an exercise in a vacuum, because Nick does not know that Jason has an idol either, that he knows that Ty has an idol, and he knew that Neil had an idol. So he only knows where one idol is. So this would be to be some in, if Nick knew that there was a second idol on this side, would it be better to join up with the people who you knew had the power, or is it better to go against that side and eventually, if you can get through that, go up against people who don't have idols at Final Six, Final Five?
I think information is valuable, and when you can have it and you can use it, you use it, you know? And so if he can, if in that situation, he could sort of align with them, get himself through a few votes because, you know, they have some numbers and he can kind of do that. You know, then there's an opportunity where you might be able to throw them under the bus a little bit. You can, you know, Jason's got an idol. You could sort of help to, you know, play that a little bit and push him out. So, I mean, I think knowing that information, I would want to know as much as I could and utilize it to get as far as I could with it. It doesn't mean that, you know, he's married to them, right? So he could figure that out as he goes. I'd much rather be in a situation where, you know, where I knew the strength was to kind of play to that strength and then make it a weakness when it was needed, you know, than just be out there flying blind.
See, I feel like in this season, especially with the threat looming of the super idol on one side, it's almost like, you know, taking out the Death Star before.
He doesn't know that. Right? He doesn't, you know, I think only, you know, only the other three do. So, you know.
So I would say that it's probably, I mean, I'm thinking back to Parvati and Suri in Survivor Micronesia again, where it's like, okay, around this point in the game, Ozzy has an idol. They know Ozzy has one of the hidden immunity idols. And it's around this time when you have enough numbers to be able to either do some sort of a blindside or a vote split, where it's less likely that people are going to want to play their idols around these numbers in the games, as opposed to when you start to like see the light at the end of the tunnel, where it's like, okay, Final Six, I guess I could just play my idol tonight and maybe I can find it again at Final Five. Like, there's more of a benefit to play it because you're closer to the finish line once you get there. So I think that it's probably, if I was in Nick's position, I would say, okay, let me work with this side and then try to organize some sort of a blind side from within of the tie group, rather than go against this group where now I'm trying to figure out, okay, are they going to play the hidden immunity idol? I think I would rather be on the side that has the idol, but work from within to sort of, you know, get some actionable information out of that group.
Yeah, I agree with you. The other thing I'm looking at as I'm thinking about this with Nick is that, you know, these other guys, I think there's, you know, there's the potential that Jason's going to say something, I think, that's going to piss someone off. And you know, I don't know. I feel like these guys, there's a chance, it'd be very easy to say, you know, if there's a moment where he feels, if the numbers are kind of, if we're getting down to it, you know, 5-6 people left, and he, you know, senses that this is an opportunity to take out Jason, and he knows, you know, he's been riding along with them and he knows that these guys have an idol. He can use that, right? He's got this opportunity to now say, I think this is what's going on. I think this is what they're going to do. And he can help, you know, shift the game that way. And he can kind of ride in between. It's just, you know, they're strong now. They're confident now. They've got the idols now. I mean, latch yourself onto that and ride it out as long as you can.
Now, you talked about Scott and you like the position that he's in. And he's also in the position of being the number one bromance of Ty over the last couple of weeks. But do you think, is it possible that Scott has been replaced by the chicken over at the Gondal / Dara beach? Is Ty's new BFF the chicken? Now that we have Scott and Jason reunited.
Well, the chicken can't get votes and the chicken can't win. So I think Scott's going to be fine just as long as he doesn't, you know, eat the chicken.
Well, Joe said that Ty and the chicken are like father and son. And I was loving some of those scenes with Ty and the chicken last night. Here is Ty with his BFF, the chicken, last night when he is trying to get it to eat the coconut and not eat the people food.
Well, I'll be after you. Get that out. You can just... Oh my God!
that I really did. I was dying.
Oh my God!
Some of my favorite moments this season are the looks from Joe, the glances, the glares, the absolute I don't know what it is. It's not venom. It's not. It's just like it's a mix of like disappointment and anger and frustration. It's wisdom.
Yeah. It's the Danny Glover. I'm getting too old for this. You know what?
Just glaring down on some of the behavior that he's watching. And God bless him. He doesn't, for the most part, say anything to anybody's face.
Yeah.
You know, but you could just see him peering over the, you know, over his eyebrows. Like, what are these kids doing? And it's just, I love it. It's
yeah. I think you can hear him a little bit in this clip of Ty working with the chicken.
Stop. No.
He wants it, man.
No, no, no.
No.
That's great. The scene, by the way, when he interrogates Peter reminds me of Meet the Parents.
Oh, yeah. Which scene? That
really any of them for that matter.
Do I have nipples? Anytime. Can you milk me, Peter?
Yeah, any time De Niro's doing the it reminds me of that dynamic. Was great.
Okay, let's take another question and let's talk about what should the Braun tribe be doing now that Neil is out of the game? How does this change things moving forward for what Scott and Jason want to do? Here is a question. This is from Van from Phoenix.
Hey, Rob. This is Van calling from Phoenix, Arizona. My question is about Nick. Wouldn't it make sense for Braun to take him out now? I mean, if Braun has Ty and Julia, they no longer need Nick to have the numbers, and he has the info about the idol. Love to hear your thoughts. Thanks.
So now we have a situation where Scott ended up telling Nick last week, Ty has an idol. He doesn't know about the Jason idol, but he knows about the Ty idol. He has that information. Now that group, that sort of beauty plus Braun group, they still have 7. It's only 3 on the other side. Is it the right move? Almost like a la The Departed. The guy that has the information, do you take that guy out now?
It's an interesting way to play it. Well, first of all, I still don't quite understand why Scott told Nick that. I still haven't been able to follow, and I've listened to all these different conversations about it. Especially he was playing so, it's such a good showing that previous episode or a couple ago when Anna went, this was just didn't seem to make any sense to me. Can you just walk me through that?
Okay.
First?
Well, then, you know, I have a question about that, too. Let's go ahead. Let's play this question and then let's talk about that more in detail. This is from Karina in Dubai.
Hi, this is Karina from Dubai, and I'm 11 years old, by the way. I was just wondering, do you think Scott benefited by telling Jason about Ty's idol? And do you think he put his game in harm by not telling Sydney? Thanks.
Yeah, how about that? We have 11-year-old listeners in Dubai.
Tremendous. It's great. Seriously, that's awesome.
Okay. So for Karina, all right. So what about this idea of that? So he told Jason about Ty's idol. He also told Nick about Ty's idol. We didn't see him tell Sydney about Ty's idol. Should we assume he did not tell Sydney about Ty's idol?
I guess so. I mean, I hate to base things on the previews for the next week. Mm-hmm. You know, you see the confrontation between Jason and Sydney, so you gotta, you know, wonder where that's coming from. Does sort of suggest, you know, that there's a bond between Scott and Nick that maybe no one else is aware of, even though I think we know that that's not necessarily the case, but it certainly could come across that way. If I'm Sydney, if I'm really anybody for that matter, and he's sharing that information, it's really impulsive. That's something that, if I'm Sydney and I find out that this happened, you know, it's like, well, A, why did you tell him? B, why didn't you tell me? Mm-hmm. It just makes Scott seem like a wild card. And that's what it felt like when the way they presented it. Even Nick seemed surprised by it. Like, why is he telling me this? Like, it just, none of it made any sense. It seemed very out of character and really impulsive. If I'm aligned with him or I'm working with him, I would be a little concerned. It's like, well, what else is he going to share?
Yeah. So this is pretty wild, I thought. So you have Scott and Jason and Nick together. And I believe it's Scott who says, hey, okay, this is just the 3 of us. Not even Sydney can know this. Now, maybe after Nick's not around, they do tell Sydney, which I kind of feel like would make more sense. And even if Scott didn't tell Sydney, I feel like Jason would, because he's been with Sydney for this whole stretch of the game. So, but I thought that was really interesting that they said, okay, we're not even going to tell Sydney about this. And that'd be very interesting to find out whether or not Sydney did know about Ty's idol. So through all of this, your question is, what was the benefit of telling Nick about Ty's idol? To me, I think it was just like, hey, let's get this guy on our side. Let's win him over. and let's tell him some secrets, but I'm not telling him my ATM pin code. It's like, hey, you want to know something? You want to work with us? Like, Ty's pin code is...
Oh, my God!
Yeah, but it just arms Nick with something that he doesn't need to have. It just...
Right.
I don't know. I get it. And it, there has to be other ways to do that, to make that bond.
But worst case scenario is that Ty gets screwed over.
I mean, even Jason had a look on his face like, what are you... You know, what are you doing? Even though he's learning about it, like, it just none of it made a ton of sense. And you got to think, and you're right, even if Jason goes back to Sydney, she's still going to say, well, I have to imagine goes through her mind, well, why wasn't I part of this conversation in the first place?
Yeah.
You know, that. So it just it breeds a lot of potential for negative that I just, to me, there's no, yeah, there maybe there's a short term benefit, but the potential to go wrong is just, you know. Too much.
You have to go back to where the players' heads are at going into this vote. And I think that Scott is a pretty smart guy. And I think he understands what's going on in terms of the numbers. And everybody seemed to know it's going to be this split, which is coming up, where you have the brains on one side, especially he's out on Aubrey and Joe. So that only leaves seven other people that are in this tribe of 11. And so he's like, okay, I need at least six of them. And he has himself and the Braun group. That's three. And he has Ty and Julia. So that's five. He needs one more person to come over, whether it's Nick or Michelle. So he's going all in and trying to get Nick to come and be on his side. And he already, it's kind of like Monopoly, where it's like, all right, I already have a couple of the yellows of the beauty tribe. I need another one so I can start putting my houses on this thing. And so he's like, okay, here's everything I have. I need to, you know, mortgage whatever, you know, information I know to get Nick on my side so I can get six, because six wins this round.
Where were they at that point with their suspicion of Neil having an idol?
I think that at that point, I think that Jason had just let them know, had just let Scott know that he has an idol. And so maybe that sort of accelerates things. Okay, we definitely need six, because if they have four in the idol, doesn't matter what, you know, what they're, as long as we pick the right person to put the votes on, we've got this thing. And then we just knock them all out.
I don't know. This is one of these things where I get it. I guess I'm coming around to it. It's hard to sort of put yourself in that position, obviously, but it just seems to me that you wouldn't want to divulge that so haphazardly. It just sends, you know, there's a lot of people left. There's still a lot of game to go. It just seems like you're putting too much out there to have to then reel that back in.
Yeah.
It's not like Scott was going home. They weren't, I mean, I don't know. I don't remember
a moment where
it felt like the momentum was going that way. So, I mean, why put yourself in that position? But I get what you're saying. It does, I could go there.
I was where you were last night, and Steven was the first one who said, I think this is a really good move. I've really come around on it today, especially after I watched the episode a second time. I think it's probably a smart move on Scott's part. All right, let's take another question. Let's go and check in with our friends in St. Louis from the St. Louis Wine and Cheese Party. I believe they are wearing their Ruben Tejada jerseys as they record this voicemail.
Hey, Rob, it's your friends from St. Louis. Two quick questions for you.
First, Debbie pointed out that she's playing the best offensive game.
Damn, Debbie.
Who's playing the best defensive game?
Also, we thought it was pretty awkward when Jeff and Dr. Rupert came to inspect everyone's thighs.
Roger that.
Do you think that's because Liz and Peter needed medical attention after being voted out? Did that make them more concerned about the players still in the game?
Looking forward to see what Sydney has in store next week. Storms are coming.
Okay, maybe storms are coming next week. All right, so let's take that in a couple of parts. All right, the first part of the question was, who's playing the best defensive game? We heard last night where Debbie said she's going on offense. Who's the Juan Lagares out here? That who's the person who's going to be the defensive substitution in this merge? Do you see anybody playing a defensive game? And what does that look like?
First of all, that group is having a lot of fun.
Yeah.
They seem to be really enjoying themselves. Yeah, that was going to be my question here is what does a defensive game look like? I mean, I feel like kind of maybe Michelle is, you know, she seems to be, I'm thinking of it in terms of playing on your heels, kind of like I said at the beginning of the show, be patient. And I feel like she's maybe doing that. It's kind of hard to say Julia is, because we haven't really seen a ton of her. So yeah. I don't really have a good read on her. Joe is kind of, you know, just kind of there. You know, so I guess I would go with Michelle, who is involved. She's just not been very aggressive, and she's sort of, you know, I think kind of keeping things at arm's reach. Does that make sense?
See, I would say I think that the defensive game is who is doing the most to protect the lead. And I think that you have this bigger group of this group of seven that was going to vote together. Who's doing the most to sort of make sure the other side doesn't score any points against them? And I would say that I think it would be Jason. I think that maybe he's the person who's coming up with the plan to thwart what the offense is trying to do by scoring on this group. And ultimately, like, he's coming up with the plan. Okay, we'll put the votes on Aubrey because they'll never see it coming. And, you know, I'll keep this group tight together. And you see him talking with Michelle and trying to keep the numbers on their side. So I feel like that that's probably the person who's doing the most defensively to keep that majority.
I mean, that to me sounds like offense, though. I mean, if you're the one launching the missiles, you know.
Well, the best defense is a good offense.
That's true. Okay. if I don't know if it exists in the season, but it seems to me it would be somebody that Sandra comes to mind, Sari to a certain extent, where you're in the majority and they're picking you off and you're kind of repositioning and maybe you're assisting in who's getting voted off because it's not you. And you just kind of maneuver your way around like that. To me, maybe that sounds defensive. I don't know. I don't know that offense defense necessarily applies.
Yeah, kind of feel like that, especially with Scott Pollard there. I wonder if basketball is really the right metaphor more so than baseball, because in baseball, you're either playing offense or playing defense, where I feel like that it's a much quicker thing where you're going from offense to defense in basketball. And I kind of feel like that, you know, you could be getting an assist on a score, but that's not necessarily playing defense. Whereas if you're actively trying to keep the ball away from the other team, that's probably considered defense as well, even if you're on offense trying to run out the clock.
And this is a tough one.
It's tough. It's tough. Again, we're mixing metaphors around.
Yeah.
Cut us some slack, Wine and Cheese Alliance in St. Louis. All right. And then in terms of with the increased attention to the medical situation, do you get the sense that because we had Peter and Liz having to get medical attention at Ponderosa, do you think that that was the impetus for, hey, let's go and check everybody out again?
I think it would have to be, right? I mean, you heard the two stories, right? Two people leave, they both have infections on them, obviously, and I'm sure they look the same in similar situation. They both went and got operated on. So it's a concern. And then there they are standing there, four people tell Jeff to his face, you know, that this is what's going on.
Yeah.
Clearly that raises a flag. I mean, anybody that knows anything about infections like that knows that they are very serious, you know. And so, yeah, I mean, I would think that they definitely learned. And I think actually the further tell is, and you talked a little bit about this with Stephen on Know It Alls, with, you know, what they did for them, their season, which was filmed after this. Now, there was obviously different climate. Some of the things were a little different, but essentially the same. And they took, you know, precautions. So, I mean, it seems to me like they definitely learned, which is good. I mean, if they're going to put them in this position and it's clearly having this effect, like, they should be proactive in terms of taking care of them, because that's deadly.
Yeah, I don't know if one had a bigger impact than the other. I think that the fact that they say, okay, well, here's, you know, six different players in this season that all have, you know, pretty gnarly infections going on. Let's get some special attention to what's going on with this. All right, let's take another question. And we talked to one of our listeners in Dubai, but how about a listener of RHAP that's in Syria?
Hey, Rob, this is Kodar, all the way from Syria. So my question is about Julia. It seems like she'll be on the bottom no matter where she goes. So what's the best thing to do at this point if you're Julia? Is she in a sticky situation? Thank you.
So, you know, not only do we have listeners in Syria, but they know jokes from season 29 of Rob is a Podcast.
You should be flattered. I think it's great.
I'm blown away.
You're world famous.
Yeah, you Rob has a planet.
I can introduce myself, the world famous. Yeah. Rob Sesanina. It's great.
Yeah. Okay. So, Julia, we haven't talked about her. She really did not get a lot of airtime last night in terms of, at least from the previous 2 weeks, she had gotten to be more of the story. So what do you think about where she is? Do you find her to be in a sticky situation? Because I find her to be in a pretty safe spot, and it's probably one of the safest bets on the board for the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, one, no one really knows anything about her, so it's pretty easy here to maybe, you know, to kind of scoot through a little bit. I think I remember seeing her, you know, having some nice conversations with Scott. Seems like, you know, she's got a relationship with Ty. I don't know how strong it is, but they know each other. She's obviously got a relationship with Michelle. Seems like a nice kid. You know, hasn't really had a lot of opportunities to burn bridges. Mm-hmm. But then again, she hasn't really had a lot of opportunities to make them, I think, with some of these players. So, I mean, I agree. I think she's in kind of a nice, like you said, a nice, safe, kind of cushiony spot. Eventually, she's going to have to get her game on, but I don't feel like it's, you know, this week or at least the next couple, you know, couple rounds here.
Yeah, I think that she's probably good to stick together with the beauties. I mean, the thing is that there are more beauties than there are brawn. If you could ever get the beauties back on the same page and you could get this thing down to final seven, and maybe that's an argument for Scott and Jason to get rid of Nick, because that, you know, if you move forward with a six instead of a seven, then you would get rid of the option for the beauties to get back together. But you're kind of in a good spot where the beauties, no pun intended, sitting pretty.
There's, you know, Jason's, you know, wanting to play like Russell and, you know, get his, you know, his girls together and all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, you wonder at some point, like you said, if they could vote out Nick and they can sort of, you know, utilize Ty's relationship from, you know, from the original Beauty Tribe and maybe pull Julie and Michelle. And he could sort of kind of go in that direction a little bit. You know, she, because he, you know, he's obviously going to start thinking about, and you heard this already from, I think it was Michelle that mentioned, you know, no one's going to vote for vote for him because, you know, he's making enemies, which I feel like they haven't really shown that on the show. I don't get that vibe from him. I mean, except those, you know, obviously the beginning with Blondie,
Alicia,
as he said. So, you know, I mean, it seems like, you know, he's savvy enough to know that maybe, you know, with Julie or somebody like that, somebody you want to go with. But we'll see if he learned anything from Russell. He credits him for playing such a perfect game. We'll see what he picked up.
Let's take another question. Speaking of playing games, this is a question from Doug, who has a question about a different game and how it applies to Survivor.
Hello, Rob and Matt. It's Doug in Pittsburgh with a very important strategic question. When playing the Oregon Trail, do you attempt to ford the river or call off the wagon and float it across? Secondly, what do you think Nick and Michelle should do next week? Should they play with the, should they stay with the brawn, or should they go back with the brains and attempt to get rid of some of the brawn?
Okay. All right. Two-part question. All right. Should, when you play the Oregon Trail, should you caulk the wagon or ford the river? No, did you ever play the Oregon Trail?
No, I know.
Do you know what it is?
I've heard people talk about it.
Yeah, it was a game that, and this is going to make at least me sound really old. I don't know if it makes you sound older or younger because you don't even have any idea what I'm talking about, or or you never played it. So I don't know if you're better or worse than me, but when we were in like elementary school, that was like an educational game. And right. You used to like type in like five people's names, and it's like, okay, these are the people that are on the Oregon Trail. And you were sort of like trying to get from wherever you were, I guess, to Oregon to go and settle on the West Coast. And so you typed in like four or five people's names, and those were the people in your group. And you had a certain amount of money, and you had to sort of like, okay, you know, oh, do I spend my resources on wagon axles, or what, you know, where do I? And then if you didn't bring enough food, you had to go and shoot like a buffalo or a squirrel. And then like at different points, like you would be presented with different obstacles of like, oh, okay. So-and-so is sick. What do? Do you feed them or do you do whatever? And then people would always like die. So you'd be in my group and it was like, oh, Matt has died of dysentery. It's like, it was show like a tombstone. Yeah.
I do remember this. It was very like computer DOS. Like it was just like right. Text, right? Like this does ring a bell.
Like, okay. Yeah. Like, okay. And that was the appeal where you could just have a friend in your class and it's like, oh, Ty has died of dysentery.
Oh my God.
Right.
Okay. And so
I do remember playing this.
That you would get to a river and there's like, oh, what do you want to do? Do you want to caulk the wagon and float across the river? Or do you want to try to ford across the river? And fording across the river would just be like, you just try to roll your wagon over it. And then you would probably then end up like losing all your stuff in the river. Like, you've lost everything in the river. And game, Ty has died.
Over. Oh, my God.
I've turned him into Kenny from South Park now.
Well, I don't have an answer to this question, so but I'm fascinated by this, yes. And thanks for the memories.
Yes. The answer is that you always should caulk the wagon. Always gotcha. Be caulking. That's right.
Gotcha.
Okay. And then the second part for Nick and Michelle, what should they do next week? Because they're in an interesting spot now. If you really look at them as a pair, okay, so they're 7. Okay, in a group of 10, they could potentially swing from the 7 to the 3. That would get it to 5-5. They could either get into some sort of a, you know, of a tie, or if they could maybe free up Julia, that's somebody else that could swing. You also see Sydney, somebody who is seems to be feuding with Jason in the preview. Maybe that's another person who could be cut loose. Do you think it makes any sense for Nick and Michelle to revisit going with the 3 remaining brains?
I don't. I mean, it seems like their momentum is carrying them towards, towards Jason, Scott, specifically Jason and Scott. I don't know. Sydney plays into it. You know, and I can imagine, you know, Michelle, Jason, like final two, like you kind of see the way that that might shake. Nick, I think they're going to throw overboard for the reasons you mentioned earlier.
No, caulk the wagon. Yeah. You don't have to throw him overboard.
Well, for the reasons you mentioned earlier, you know, sharing that information with him, he's a, you know, bigger player. It just seems like, you know, he's a guy that they might cast aside. But Michelle, I think, can kind of wiggle her way through there. I don't see anybody hitching their wagon. Here's the wagon again. I can't get away from it. To the brains. So they just seem very fractured. They don't bring a lot to the table. I just can't see that happening at this point. It just seems like the momentum with the way that they're putting this together is going with specifically with, I think, Scott and with Jason.
Should Michelle and Nick flip?
No, no, no,
no.
Not yet. Not yet. At least wait until you get down to 9. And then, you have some you don't want to flip into a tie where it's 5-5 and not this guy.
Oh, my God.
Not that tie. Okay. They're with Ty. All right. So then let's take a question. This is from Harry down in Atlanta. He wants to know about what happens with Nick's immunity now that we had no vote.
Hey, Rob and Matt, this is Harry from Atlanta, and I have a quick question for each of you guys. Rob, will Nick's individual immunity carry over to the next tribal council, or do you think it'll be up for grabs again? And Matt, Anna, who was voted out a couple of weeks ago as a professional poker player, do you think she could hang in a clubhouse game with Ricky Henderson and Bobby B? Thanks. Love the podcast.
All right. Could Anna Kite beat Bobby Bonilla and Ricky Henderson in poker?
I, from what I understand, yes. And however, that conversation would be very interesting.
Yeah. And we do know, as Mets fans, between Anna Kite and Bobby Bonilla, one of them is definitely getting $1 million this year. The other one, it does not appear that that was the case for her. All right. So then let's get into the other part of this question of will Nick's immunity carry over into the next vote? And the answer, unfortunately for Nick, is also
no, no, no,
no.
Sorry.
Yeah, that would. First of all, they're running. You mentioned this the other know-it-alls. They're almost running out of people. Mm-hmm. They gotta get on with the show and play the straight. That would be terrible if they did that.
It's going to be a whole new episode. It's just as, you know, you just, sorry, Nick. And it's not fair because it gets exposed as being an immunity threat. Now, I don't know how much of an immunity threat you say he is because of that competition where it's just sort of like a balancing act where you just have to stand still for a really long time, but it certainly opens people's eyes. Scott Pollard had a secret scene where he's talking about how he's happy that Nick won it because it puts the focus on him as potentially being somebody who's a physical threat and takes some of the focus off of him. So for Nick, he ends up sort of outing himself as more of a threat. And then he ultimately doesn't even have one vote that he's protected at because of it. But I'm sorry, those are certainly the rules. Do you think that Survivor should let Nick keep the immunity necklace? They will not. That is not what the rules are. But do you think that they should, in the case of an evacuation, if you win immunity, you still get to be immune for one vote?
And then somebody else wins immunity, they
sure.
are also
Sure, let's have
immune.
A second immunity necklace, just to sort of like, this is something new that we're doing in the game. I think it would certainly create an interesting dynamic at the next tribal council if two people have the immunity necklace, although there's only one immunity necklace, but sometimes they take out a second one. They've
well,
done that.
I mean, they could just say he, yeah, but it's certainly fair because he did win a challenge and he should be rewarded for that. So, I mean, it's definitely fair, but it's not a whole lot of fun, mm-hmm. so... I would say no. If I were producing the show, I wouldn't do it. But, if I were playing, sure.
Mm-hmm. I wonder,
Nick, yes.
Is there some sort of choice they could offer him where it's like, okay, Nick, let me give you an opportunity here. You know, you won immunity at the last immunity challenge. You didn't get to be safe for a vote. Like, is there something that they could offer him? Either you could... you could play or eat or something like that. I don't know. It's probably too complicated. I think that we're the only ones worried about this. Yeah. I don't think that it's a big deal. It's just those are the breaks on Survivor. Sometimes it's not fair.
Exactly.
Okay. Why don't we take a question from our buddy Ron, who's up in Toronto, has a question which that involves Debbie.
Hi, Robin and Matt. It's Ron from Toronto. I have a bold prediction to make. It's going to be my Blue Jays versus your Mets in the World Series this year. By the way, I'm still not over that terrible trade of sending Darnot and Syndergaard for Dickey and Toley. Anyways, my question is, will Debbie's final place in this game be higher than the amount of complete games that Noah Syndergaard throws this year? Oof. Take care.
All right. Matt, we have to figure out, are you taking Noah Syndergaard complete games or Debbie's placement in the game? What's the higher number here? All right, so let's figure this out. Okay, number of Noah Syndergaard complete games. Can you put the jinx on Noah Syndergaard?
Let's give him two.
Two. Okay.
I mean, and it never happens anymore in baseball. But let's say he gets two.
Okay. So then... it seems like, and again, we're saying higher number. So unless, you don't think Debbie's the winner, do you?
I do not think Debbie's the winner, no.
So if Debbie
is not
the winner, is she finishing second place?
I don't see that. No.
Total blindside.
I think she's great, but no.
So by this methodology, that Debbie's placement number will be certainly higher in your estimation than Noah Syndergaard complete games.
I guess so.
Yeah.
It depends on what you consider higher. But yeah, I mean, she will not finish second. I don't see that happening with her.
She didn't have a great night last night.
No. And she's, I can't remember how she was described. I don't think she was the loose cannon. Right. So, but that's kind of how she's playing. Like she's kind of all over the board. And she seems very in control of her, of her presentation, mm-hmm. And very mindful of what she's doing. It's just that I don't know that her actions necessarily match up with where I think she's going to need to be, especially as this game moves on. And, maybe she goes from being entertaining and kind of, funny to, zip it already. Like we've had enough. When that starts to take place, I don't know how that's all going to match up for her. I just think eventually she's going to get bounced.
In fact, it's almost, I feel like after last night, hard to envision the scenario where Debbie is the winner. Like, how does that ultimately happen from this point out? Like, how does she round up a group? Since it seems like the people that would need to be in the group, if you were going to say, come up with sort of like the perfect scenario for Debbie, it's like, okay, Debbie moves forward from here and she picks up Joe and she keeps Aubrey, who seems like she doesn't want to work with her, and she gets Nick, who seems like he didn't want to work with her. She lost Neil, who was in her group. And then it's like she gets Michelle and Julia on board. I mean, the only thing that you could imagine is that she ends up going on some sort of an immunity run here. Like people forget about her and she goes on an immunity run. And I mean, it's possible, but it seems very unlikely to me based on how the events of last night went.
I mean, I can't get away from the Jason Scott, Ty, trio. to me, mm-hmm. that they have a really interesting dynamic, and there's idols in play. They have a lot going on. I don't see how they associate with Debbie or how they take eventually. And that other group, that brain centric group, is kind of, you know, they all have, it's not that there's infighting. It's just, they're not, you know, they're showing signs of weakness. There's cracks. They're bad mouthing each other. They're talking, you know, I don't see how they trump this other trio and kind of what they're putting together as a group.
You have to watch out for those trios.
Double and triple teaming people isn't the way to go when you're trying to get the numbers.
Yeah, that's right. Also, do you think that conversation between Debbie and Ty will end up looming large, where Debbie really turned off Ty?
I think she turned off a lot of other people as well. Like, anybody listening to that conversation had to think, what is she doing? This is not how you, I mean, I would hope that they realize this is not how you build anything, let alone an alliance in this game. Like, you know, just go up to people and tell them, hey, this is, you know, this is what you're going to do. And great, it's done.
No.
And anybody, so I mean, seriously, anybody watching that had to be thinking, what is she up to? And it just, again, the presentation on all of this just seems a little off to me within that group. It's very fractured.
Yeah, not great. All right. I've got one more voicemail question for you. Let's take this one. This is from Bill in New Jersey, has a question for you.
Hey, Rob and Matt, what's going on? This is Bill in New Jersey. Matt, I really love MetsBlog.com. Bob, thanks for another mediocre season of podcasting. But my question for you is, who do you think would win, which current Mets player in the season of Survivor, hitters versus pitchers? Thanks a lot. Take care. And let's go, Mets.
Okay, Matt, the season of Survivor, Mets hitters versus Mets pitchers, who is the likely winner?
On this particular team?
Yes, current Mets pitchers versus current Mets hitters. Who wins that Survivor season?
I'll go with, because I'm sure all of your listeners know what all these people we're about to talk about.
We don't have to cast it right now.
I would go with Jacob DeGrom.
DeGrom? Oh, that's a good pick. Yeah.
He's affable. He's a nice guy. You know, he's crafty. You know, he does what he's got to do out there on the mound. You know, he just seems like a scrappy kind of player with a nice disposition, nice personality. I think he would be fine. I wouldn't pick a hitter because I don't think they have to be as strategic. And I think pitchers actually do. Like, I think that on the mound, you got to outsmart people and you're thinking that way. And I would go with Jacob DeGrom. The rest of those pitchers, I think, would have pissed off everybody and they'd be voted out. So
that's a great point. I think it's the right answer also. I think you have Harvey is going to get pissed off, and no pun intended, and he's going to get angry at people, and he'll storm off, and maybe Syndergaard is going to get too hot and bothered, and you know, David Wright is too nice. I think he won't see the blind side coming. So I think that DeGrom might be the winner. The right
pick. We never pick winners. Yeah, I'm terrible at picking winners. So mm-hmm. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, for whatever, you know.
Who's the Debbie of this season?
Oof. Joof. Jerry Blevins. He's a really pitcher on the Mets. Yeah.
I would say that the Debbie and Ty Trang all rolled into one is Bartolo Colon.
Okay, well, a character.
Yes.
That's what we're going for.
I think that's the answer. All right. Let's get into some of the other stuff going on from last night's episode. Okay. So many people were wanting to talk about some of the comments from the episode last night. And there was really, it might have been a Survivor first because Matt, as you were somebody who noticed, was it the first time in Survivor history that the players who were involved also were on the same page with us at home in terms of Jeff Probst's out of context, inappropriate comments?
100%. It was almost like they were anticipating as soon as they explained the challenge, you could see a little like giggling going on. I think even Jeff cracked a smile at one point. The comment about the two balls banging against each other, like he couldn't even get it out with a straight face.
Well, this challenge always produces results for us here on the voicemail podcast with the between the disc and the balls. And yeah. So here was Ty Trang, and this is Jeff's line about him.
Ty's balls banging into each other, never good.
Oh my God!
No!
Never good.
That's the best. That's great.
Not ideal. That's not ideal. And Debbie, I think, really started to lose it on that one. You can see her if you rewatch this.
She's like tipping over on the bleacher back there. It's great.
And then we had this other line from Jeff about Nick.
Nick with a lot of movement. His ball's dancing all over the place.
Yeah.
Peek-a-boo.
Yeah. So all dancing all over the place. Wow.
I mean, that's impressive. This is to be serious about it. Like when they put this together, they got to consider that type of stuff. Cause like, if you're playing, like he's trying to keep his balance and do that. Like, how do you, I mean, I don't know. I've never been in that position. Maybe you're tuning everything out, but like, you know, the last you want to do is start like chuckling when you're trying to, you know.
Well, Nick has a big smile on his face at that point.
Yeah, you're right.
Also,
he does.
Yeah.
Well, I think he always has a smile on his face, by the way. What is, you know.
Yeah. So, I mean, that he's a guy, I mean, he's blogged on this website. He knows we do this on the show. Like I'm sure that thought has passed his mind during this moment.
Yeah. Probably like the rest of us, the minute it got introduced, it's like, oh boy, here we go. He just knew it was coming.
Nick with a lot of movement. His ball's dancing all over the place.
Yeah. Oh, I wonder, like, is it too meta to ever imagine a scenario where somebody is trying to put Jeff Probst in the position where he's having to narrate something, like trying to get the words out of his mouth?
Well, nothing beats, I mean, nothing will ever top Rodney and Dan. That is, without question, the funniest of all. I mean, and that wasn't even Jeff. Like, that had nothing to do with them. That was just the two of them. That is one of the best things you've ever played on this podcast. It's priceless. But, you know, I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah.
But they got to be aware of it. I mean, seriously.
Also,
if I get out of a challenge because Jeff's making jokes, like, that doesn't seem particularly fair, you know?
Right. I don't know how they would play that on the show where it's like Jeff ends up saying about Ty's
balls banging into each other.
And then Ty ends up falling out of the challenge.
No.
And then what do they do? Like, how do they edit that?
No idea.
Yeah. Okay. Also, a lot of talk about Neil and where he had the hidden immunity idol last night. First, we had this.
Neil was walking around with a big bulge in his pocket, and I'm just like,
Yeah. Is that the right response?
Just like,
And then Jason also said this about Neil.
Neil has a bulge in his cargo pocket.
But Neil ended up saying to me and on the show that he actually was putting the hidden immunity idol in a different spot.
But in a moment of desperation, all I have to do is reach into the family jewels and grab out the idol.
Now, that seems like an odd place to have the hidden immunity idol.
All the time he's got that? I don't get it. First of all, I've never, I wouldn't, why not just say he's got the idol in his pocket?
Like, I don't know.
Word it that way. I don't know. But
yeah,
like, just, you know, use the correct language. But anyway,
is it possible that Aubrey, upon knowing the location of the hidden immunity idol, might have said to Neil, hey, you know what? Thanks, but no thanks on the idol. I'm good.
Yeah, with infections and everything else. Yeah. Take that thing away.
Just burn it. Throw it in the fire. We'll see what goes on there, but that seems like the worst place, unless you really just was like, you know, really want to impress people, maybe you put the hidden immunity idol there and away you go. Okay, let's also Matt, the last few weeks on this show this season, we've had so many entries into our weekly winner of the RHAP song contest. Are you ready to judge this week's entries?
Yes.
Okay, good. I'm glad you said yes. Okay, so let's go ahead and let's get into them. We have two entries this week. All right, entry number one. This comes from one of our listeners, Doug, and he has a song that is about the conditions, the very harsh conditions for the survivors with all these injuries. Here is Doug's song.
I like big cuts and I cannot lie. Your bacteria is so fly. When the wound sets in, it's a pus-filled place and the doctor's in your face, you get pulled. Gotta act so tough because you love this game and stuff. Ice cream pants he's wearing, keeps his idol already swearing. Ooh, brains be down a Garcia, wouldn't wanna be ya. Nick is trying to play, but Debbie's aggro, she's so cray cray.
Okay, all right.
So good start.
What do you think of I like big cuts?
That's good. It's a good start.
Okay.
I like where this is going.
All right. Well, we'll see. All right. Then our second entry comes from our reigning winner in the RHAP song contest. This is from the legendary Shut Up Tim. Now, he has a song about Debbie and some of her analogies that she made. Of course, last night, Debbie told us when Aubrey asked her, how are you and Neil doing? This is how Debbie described her relationship with Neil.
Tighter than ever. Salt and pepper. Ebony and ivory. Okay. Toilet paper and toilets. Yeah.
You know, like
my favorite part of that is she's like, OK, I got it. You know, and Debbie just keeps going.
Yeah. Like, you know, salt and pepper, you know, ebony and ivory, toilets and toilet paper.
Yeah.
Like, that's not even a thing. Nobody's ever said, oh, we got to get it like toilets and toilet paper.
She says it so confidently, too. That's it. Oh, man. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, here is what Shut Up Tim came up with after hearing that.
Toilet paper and toiletries, just another of Debbie's analogies she uses to describe her alliance with Aubrey.
Right, well, technically it was her alliance with Neil to Aubrey, but right. We won't. Who's scoring
as well?
That's right. Yes. All right, Matt. So two simple entries this week. What is the pick?
I laughed harder. I enjoyed Shut Up Tim's. I liked the first one by Doug, but I'm gonna go with toilet and toiletries.
Okay, there you go. Congratulations to Tim.
I wanted to hear more of it.
He only sent me 30 seconds. And you know, a lot of people are happy about that. Okay. All right. So let's start to get into what's happening in the Survivor social media. All right. You ready for this?
Go for it.
All right. Here is the great Ryan Elder breaking you the Survivor social media.
Tweets, baby, tweets, Survivor tweets. They're better than Debbie seducing Nick during the merch feast tweets.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow. Better than Debbie seducing Nick at the merge feast. And that's the great Ryan Elder. Follow Ryan Elder on Twitter at Ryan Elder Music. All right. All right. So here we go. Here are some of the Survivor social media, all the tweets from this past week. And how about we go into Neil Gottlieb? He has a lot to say, always on Twitter, has a lot of behind the scenes stuff. He did tweet, "You know it's bad when at ScottPollard31 and at SargeJason, when Nick Majorano calls you arrogant." That's how when you know it's bad.
Yeah.
And as demonstrated, Nick Majorano had a tweet last night. He said, "Oh, please, I'm 6'2", 225 pounds. A big disc and some balls isn't going to be foreign to me."
Oh, okay.
Nick with a lot of movement. His ball's dancing all over the place.
There you go. All right. How about this now? Dr. Peter. Did you like Dr. Peter?
I mean, he was fine. I think he got kind of a, it's interesting in how he came across in your interview with him. And like, he seemed like a really nice dude. And on the show, just clearly, I don't know, his head got in the way, I guess.
Okay. Well, he tweeted, "Maybe someone needed Dr. Peter to not let them do that. Hashtag sorry, Neil." What is he saying that Neil did?
I have no idea.
I don't know. He's very cryptic. Very cryptic, yeah. Dr. Peter.
I don't know what he's talking about there. Where was Peter with all the? Didn't Peter have an infection?
He did. He did. So yeah. If he knew exactly so much, right. If he had all the answers, Yeah, why didn't he able wasn't he able to stop his own infections?
Exactly. Yeah. I don't know. That doesn't seem like something I'd want on my resume, but you know.
Then also Dr. Peter, now this might be sour grapes. He tweeted last night, episode, and then an arrow in the word yawn.
Mm.
What do you think of that?
Wow. Sour grapes. You know?
Yeah.
That doesn't interesting.
All right. So, yeah, Peter thinking that the show got really boring without him.
Well, there you go. Okay. So maybe he isn't, I don't know. Maybe he's a little, you know, not the nice guy that he presented. I don't know. This sounds crazy. This is a stupid question, I guess, but they're not like sort of obligated to, or at least discouraged from crapping on the show. Like, I would think that that's not necessarily allowed.
Yeah, I mean, is John Neese discouraged to not say that the Mets have a crappy infield after he gets traded to the Pirates?
I would think, well, he's not, you know, that's not really, he's still on the season's still running. I don't know. I guess it's a fair point. It just seems it seems like something, if I was producing the show, I'd be like, you know, hey, man, what are you doing?
I mean, but the thing is, like, you know, when they had the season in San Juan del Sur, nobody's allowed to tweet about the show.
It was a blackout, right?
There was a blackout. Now, there's no blackout, so I guess you're allowed to say whatever you want. As long as you're not doing anything that, like, you're spoiling the results where they could sue you, I guess he's allowed to say that he thinks the season is boring now. But yeah. I don't know if anybody's like, boy,
that makes sense.
This season really went downhill because Peter's not there.
I don't like this anymore because I'm not on it. That makes sense.
All right, Anna Kate, she adds in, I had two infections too, thankfully taken care of in Ponderosa. This season was brutal. Yeah, Jeff said at the immunity challenge last night, like, it's almost like at the point where if you don't have an infection, it's like there's something wrong with you.
What, I mean, how did it go down in previous seasons? Did they have these sort of issues?
Yeah, I don't get it. I don't understand. Yeah. That's why I tried to tweet this during the episode. It's like, you know, in Billy Madison, when it's like all the kids pee their pants because Billy Madison does it. If peeing your pants is cool, consider me Miles Davis.
Or like Fish, I think it was Steven that mentioned to you, like they were encouraged to boil their buffs and, like, you know, keep things clean. Like, you know, is it something as simple as just that? Like, it just seems really strange at all.
These people
are coming down with infections. Like, it's just, yeah, I don't know.
It's like the Oregon Trail. It was training us for Survivor.
I think it was.
Yeah. All right. So Steven also, you know, he tweets a lot during the episodes too. He had a couple other good ones. Steven tweeted, and then there's something even grosser, ... words I did not need to hear. Fair point.
Yeah. Speaking of gross, the conversation you guys were having on know-it-alls.
Which one? Which one?
Well, yeah, that's a good point. Never mind. I don't want to remember it.
Don't remind me. I already forgot. All right. Also, Steven said, actual title of this Survivor season, Brains versus Brawn versus Beauty versus Bacteria. So there you go. The four B's.
That's good. I like that.
Also, Eliza, she was tweeting last night, and Eliza, she's also always very worked up. I actually mentioned this in the recap podcast. She says, Jason, if the super idol didn't exist, then yeah, Neil should be your target if he has an idol, but it does exist, so why not pull him in? I thought that made a lot of sense.
That does make a lot of sense. I mean, again, being in that position, you could do, you know, now he's the perfect spot to broker something, which is really kind of the player he's, the role he's playing here.
Yeah.
So absolutely.
Well, so Eliza had an answer on this. Why doesn't Jason go and work with Neil? She said, oh, that's right. Because you have horrendous social skills and everyone hates you.
Okay. There it is.
She added another tweet. Debbie, that's an awfully aggressive way to play Survivor. Yikes. Brainstribe is in trouble.
I really wish he tweeted in all capitals.
No. Sometimes. She said, on Vanuatu, S9, I chopped my hand open with a machete and they wouldn't even give me anything. S16, they gave Penner stitches. So what is she saying? That, oh, how come they gave Penner stitches in season 16? Or is that also another example of a person who had a medical condition?
Yeah, well, I mean, there always seems like there's a little bit of judgment from people in the earlier seasons, yourself excluded, you know, in terms of how these players get to eat, how often they do, and I mean, now they're getting antibiotics. Like, it just seems like that's always sort of the tone.
So she's, narking on that why did Penner get to get stitches? Well, the problem was that Penner got stitches. That I think that if you talk to him, he would tell you that the problem was that there was like bacteria in his knee. Then they gave him stitches, and then like there was an infection going on in there. Yeah, I think he would tell you that was the problem. So Eliza might have got off lucky.
I see. You're okay. I get you. So why didn't they just take care? Why didn't they take care of Neil and then leave him in the game?
Well, I don't know. Well, no. And then what caused Penner to leave the game was then that thing that they stitched up got so infected that's why he had to leave the game. So that wasn't really a great deal if you ask Penner about that.
I find the antibiotics thing the more curious of the maneuver. Like, I get taking Neil out. You know, I understand, but bringing something into the game to help a player, that does seem a little strange. I'm not saying that they shouldn't give Aubrey antibiotics. She's sick. It makes sense. It just seems odd that they're like, you know, injecting something in there to help someone.
Well, I don't know if she's taking intravenous antibiotics or if she's taking oral antibiotics. So I don't know exactly what's going on, but I say give, you know, the more antibiotics for these people, the better when they're dealing with these things.
Yeah, you'd think that they would just give them to everybody. Like at the rate they're going on,
you know,
the show,
it's not like it's a performance enhancing drug.
They're going
right
on the show, they just start passing around like Tic Tacs. I mean, it's seriously. It seems like everybody's got an infection anyway, and if they don't, they're going to get one. So hey, let's just get started.
And again, I'm not saying that everybody should be on antibiotics for 39 days. I think that's bad health advice. But I'm saying like, hey, looks like something's popping up. Why not? Let's be extra safe for these guys.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
All right, Randy Bailey, one of the great tweeters. He said, instead of humanely killing this chicken, let's torture it for days by tying a string to its leg and watching it struggle. Okay.
Oh, my God!
How could Randy say that? Ty loves the chickens.
Well, he's not killing the chicken. I mean...
also, Randy said, Nick is getting too many unnecessary confessionals. Goodbye. Now, he'll be okay, Randy. He'll be fine.
What's an unnecessary confessional?
He says, too much airtime tonight. He felt like that was his boot last night.
I see.
He also said, at Jeff Probst, sexual innuendos are not funny anymore. # go back to rock and roll Jeopardy.
Alrighty. Definitive. I beg to differ. And so clearly does the entire cast on the show.
Yes, they are funny. We still like them. He also said, so the doctor speaks English and the survivors speak English. Why is Jeff Probst translating? I thought that was a very dramatic scene with the doctor and everybody, right? Didn't you feel like it was going to be like, who's like, oh, somebody's going home. Who's it going to be?
Yeah, the whole thing seems like it just, again, it seems strange. Like they're just going about their business and then, hey, we're here to, you know, take you home.
Yeah.
You didn't do anything. No. We're coming in here to tell you to leave. You know, it's not like something fell on his head or, you know, I don't know. It's just the whole thing seemed really bizarre.
All right, here's Survivor Penner. He said, Neil, dude, that sucks. If it's any consolation, I didn't make the jury and I had 2 surgeries. But I also got to play again. Hope you're feeling better. Penner weighs in, checks in with a fellow knee injury medevac. Wants to make sure he's doing okay.
You sound exactly like him. It is really ridiculous. I mean, honestly, you should do a show where, you know, you're just playing him. You got,
he doesn't like next it. Time he doesn't like it.
Next time Steven or somebody can't do, no, you should just do that voice. You can just do the whole show yourself and just pretend you're him. It'd be great.
Okay.
He doesn't like it?
I don't think anybody loves when people do impressions of them.
Yeah.
That's a problem. It's one of the problems with impressions where it's like, it's fun to do them, but then nobody ever likes the ones that you, like, nobody's like, oh yeah, keep doing impressions of me. I love it. Nobody likes it. All right. Nadia Anderson, she tweeted, is this Grindr or an immunity challenge? So the Anderson twins, they always like these ball challenges.
Nick with a lot of movement. His ball's dancing all over the place.
They like it. Okay. Then also we had Ethan Zahn tweeted about how I always wanted to be a dermatologist. Remember when Big Tom had Buster the Boil from Survivor Africa? 3 times the size of that one. Did this make you want to be a dermatologist, Matt?
No. No.
Yeah. Overall, it's just like really gross of like just
it
seeing
pretty
like
much has the opposite effect, quite frankly.
Yeah. Let's see. Of course, the key player in everything last night was Dr. Rupert. Did you even know that Dr. Rupert was like a person on Survivor?
No, I didn't. And did they like rotate them or?
I don't know. I had never seen Dr. Rupert. Yeah. So Dr. Rupert, he was really the person who was just making all the decisions last night. So it's only appropriate that we do a round of Rupert tweets.
Tweets, baby tweets, Rupert tweets that are better than something that happened on Survivor. Rupert tweets.
Now, again, these are not Dr. Rupert tweets. Yes. These are regular Rupert tweets. So I have no tweets like, oh, scabs, nice. So nothing like that that Dr. Rupert would tweet.
That could have been a Rupert tweet, though.
No. And tonight, we've got some really strong Rupert tweets. These are tweets that could have been tweeted by Rupert any night in Survivor history, but they were tweeted this past Wednesday night by Rupert. All right. Number one. It's a Survivor curse. People get cocky on the island. All right, that's number one. Of course, these are going to be three real Rupert tweets, one fake one. You tell me which one is the fake one. All right, Rupert tweet number two. So many annoying players. Okay, that's number two. Number three. I hope a challenge is coming soon. And number four Rupert tweeted, Survivor is rain, pain, and more pain.
Hmm.
All right. These could have been tweeted any night in Survivor history, but they were tweeted. Three of them were actually tweeted by Rupert this past Wednesday night.
So I have to pick the one that was not.
You have to pick the one that was not actually tweeted by Rupert. Yeah. The one that was made up by me.
Oh, gee.
It's a Survivor curse. People get cocky on the island.
Yep.
So many annoying players. I hope a challenge is coming soon. Or Survivor is rain, pain, and more pain.
I will go with number one, cocky one.
Okay. You think that it is a fake Rupert tweet of it's a Survivor curse. People get cocky on the island?
Yes.
Final answer?
No.
Now, Rupert tweeted
three,
that.
Wasn't it?
No.
No.
Yes. Rupert did not tweet, Survivor is rain, pain, and more pain.
Yeah.
That is a fictitious Rupert tweet.
Yeah. I was going to go with that. It was the last one. I didn't think you'd pick the last one. Let's see, I outsmarted myself. Computer.
Okay. All right. Also, Russell Hance, that he tweeted about this, not necessarily about the episode, but he did tweet a picture of a Jeff Kent baseball card for Jeff Kent playing for the Houston Astros. He said, no way Jeff Kent could have fooled me like he did on Survivor. Just found this in my sports memorabilia collection, LOL.
Why is he laughing?
I guess because he has a Jeff Kent baseball card. And then that Jeff Kent would not have been able to fool Russell Hance. He would have known.
I gotta say, I miss Russell. When his time was gone, I would love to see him back. I've got to be the only person left. I still think they should do a scene that's like Survivor final chances and like tell people this is it. You're never coming back after this.
I love this.
I would like to see him try one more time.
Yeah, I think that's good. And of course, Russell Hance does love the Houston Astros. He says, is the Houston Astros, baby. That's what he said when he was going to burn a Boston Rob's hat in Heroes versus Villains. He said, I don't even like that little B hat. The Jeff Kent Houston Astros, baby.
LOL.
Yeah. Right. And so, I guess I don't even remember Jeff Kent on the Houston Astros, but I guess in 2004, he was on the Houston Astros. So he did 2 years in Houston. Who knew? Before he went to the Dodgers. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And then last but not least, we have some Billy Garcia tweets that he tweeted. We need a hashtag douchebag apocalypse to happen at this merge. Douchebag apocalypse is a hashtag. I don't know if anybody else is using that hashtag. He also said, I got set on fire on Survivor Cook Islands and got no medical help. These guys get a house call, WTH. I like the family-friendly WTH from Billy Garcia. So again, another survivor of saying like, oh, back when I played, and I got set on fire, and the doctor didn't even come look at me.
Well, first of all, nobody lit him on fire. They were like, oh, let's burn Billy. You know? I don't get
that. Yeah. All right. Matt, great job on the Survivor voicemails this week. Very fun show. We are all set up here coming into episode 8 in Survivor Koh-Rang.
Yeah, I'm eager to see Aubrey and see what she kind of does as a little bit of a pivot move, and I'm really digging the Jason Ty Scott triumvirate. I think it's going to be cool to watch play out.
And of course, we've got another big season to watch play out, which kicks off Sunday night, Mets Royals, and then really the adventure begins, Matt.
Yeah, it's this is a expectations for Mets fans is something that we're not always used to. So, I'm the kind of baseball fan. I'm the same way with the Jets, that when there are expectations and things are going well, I begin to panic and get completely freaked out about it. So, right. I don't handle success well when it comes to sports.
Well, for you, even more so than for me, because you cover the team, you have to, you deal with the fans of the team as well. So, whereas if the Mets get off to a not great start here in April, it's like it's doubly troubling for you because, you have a rooting interest in the team. And then also people like, come to the Mets blog and also like,
oh, my God,
like you get a lot of that. So it's a lot of pressure on you based on like whether the team wins or loses, too.
Yeah, you would think that in addition to writing MetsBlog.com, I'm also the GM and the manager and the center fielder and a bunch of other positions. But that's all right. It's fun. I love it. I'm looking forward to the season because I think it's going to be, wall to wall. A lot of fun,
Is tougher on you. Whereas I would say that what I do is probably closer to covering the sport as opposed to like a rooting interest of any particular player. So it's less where like, live or die with any given tribal council, but it's a lot. I'm sure it's a lot of extra pressure for you on every game.
Yeah. Success. When the team is playing well, things are a lot nicer. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. All right. Well, of course, you could follow everything that Matt is doing, certainly by going to the great MetsBlog.com. You could also follow Matt on Twitter. He is at Matthew Cerrone on Twitter and then also at MatthewCerrone.com.
You got it. Thanks, man. Right. I appreciate it.
Matt, anything else you want to let us know about?
No, I'm good. I mean, just love the show and I love what you do. You have a lot of nice things to say about, what I've done through my career, but, vice versa. And I learned from you as well. I love what you're doing. So keep it up.
Well, Matt, thank you very much. Let's go, Mets, and I'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, man.
All right, everybody, there you have it. Matt Cerrone back here on Rob Has a Podcast. I realized that we forgot to do a hashtag with Matt Cerrone. So I'm going to go with, I'll make the executive order here to go with hashtag Caulk the Wagon. And again, that's Caulk the Wagon, not to be confused with any place where Neil is hiding the hidden immunity idol or what's moving for Nick or for Ty. That is Caulk the Wagon. All right. So, all right, here's where we go from here. We've got, of course, more Survivor coming up early next week. Josh Wiggler in the Wiggle Room on Monday. Also, David Bloomberg and I will discuss why Neil lost. And again, obviously, Neil was medically evacuated, but we'll check in with how Neil was doing in terms of David rules and what trajectory he was on. And David will go into much greater depth about that than we did on this podcast. That's coming up Monday and Tuesday. Plus, on Friday, we've got a lot more coming up in terms of Big Brother Canada. The great Johnny Mack will be joining us on the podcast to talk about the latest week in Big Brother Canada.
No!
Yes, yes, he will. That is right. So, Johnny Mack. And then, of course, on Friday night, we'll get back into The Amazing Race after its two-week hiatus with Jessica Lease. And then next week on the podcast, got another good round of shows, Chaos Cast will be joining us, and I'm very excited to talk to her about the first vote, hopefully after the merge, and something that she was involved in a couple of crazy post-merge scenarios in her two Survivor seasons, so I think that she'll have a lot of insight. And then we will get into the voicemails with my friend Akiva Winokur, the co-host of the Seinfeld post-show recap, that we are going to be celebrating our recap of Seinfeld's 100th episode next week. So thought it would be a good time to get Akiva back on the show. Okay. Of course, we've talked about last week with Jason Somerville, Run It Up Reno. I am going to be there in person. There'll be some more survivors there coming soon that will be announced. So if you want to find out more information, if you're interested in playing cards or at least going to Reno and hanging out and doing some RHAP stuff, you can go to runitupreno.com. And also, as I said at the top of the show, thanks so much to the patrons of Rob Has a Podcast. If you want to find out more about the benefits of becoming a patron, go and visit us at robhasawebsite.com/patron. Got another patron cast coming up. Or I did a patron cast this week, a call-in show, and we'll do the 5 for 5 cast again the beginning of next week back with Nicole. So find out more about that. robhaswebsite.com/patron. Looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say in the comments of robhaswebsite.com. Have a good one. Take care, everybody. Bye.
I like big cuts and I cannot lie. Your bacteria is so fly. When a wound sets in, it's a possible place, and the doctor's in your face, you get pulled. Gotta act so tough because you love this game and stuff. Ice cream panties wearing, keeps his idol already swearing. Ooh, brains me down a guy, see ya. Wouldn't wanna be ya. Nick is trying to play, but Debbie's aggro, she's so cray cray.